I know it's been a while, but I think it's time for us to take a trip down under. What do you think?
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
It's been quite a while since I've had as a guest on the program George Christensen. He is from Australia. That's where he lives. He's a politician. He belongs to what is called the National Party in Australia. He's been a member of parliament basically since 2010. And here's something that scares me. I realized today that he was born in 1978. That means I'm old enough to be his father. I mean, but he's a wonderful guy. He's a joy to talk to. He's like a lot of people that I know. He can be a lightning rod. But I got news for you. Sometimes, you know, that makes some people a little bit uneasy. But I want to bring him to the program today again. Because, you know, as we look at this world today between the tech censorship and the lockdowns and the coronavirus, you know, it's not just in North America, friends. There are issues all over the world. So I welcome back to the program today my friend, George Christensen. George, as I bring you back, let me just ask this quick question. So how are things on the coronavirus front in Australia right now?
Well, it continues on. We still have cities that go into lockdown for a handful of cases in Australia. Perth, which is in the west of Australia, Western Australia, locked down for one single case, which most people thought was insanity. As you know, Bishop Bob, should I call you Bishop Bob or just Bob?
It doesn't matter. I mean, hey, listen, my listeners, you know, I'm glad you said that because some people have mentioned that on my personal Facebook page. I used to show the title of my office in ministry, and I've learned over the years that actually Facebook frowns upon that, and I actually had a rule against it. So in order to be, you know, Mr. Nice Guy and comply, because it is their forum, and if, you know, I just because bishops and abbots were able to kind of sneak under the radar screen doesn't make it right. And if you look at my About Me, you can find out that I am. So, yeah, I've gone back to Bob because, as someone said, you were on radio for 50 years, long before you were on radio for a long time before ministry. And that's how many people know me, or, you know, to this day. And because I still use Bob Bierman on the radio, yeah, that's not a problem. So George, you can call me Bishop, you can call me Bob, just don't call me late for dinner, that's all I ask.
We'll try not to. Okay, well, I'll, out of deference, still refer to you as Bishop Bob. But, we've had this craziness in Australia where we locked down for a handful of cases, and the latest city to lockdown is once again Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, which, because of their government is just actually sadly a disgrace to the nation. You know, freedoms disappeared overnight once again for all of those citizens in Victoria. There was shocking scenes yesterday, actually, that I was made privy to. And what it is, there's a news outlet, an online news outlet by the name of Rebel News. Now, they're based out of Canada, but they have one Australian journalist by the name of RV Yemeni. Now, he's an activist journalist. There is nothing wrong with that. There's plenty of them on the left, I can tell you.
Of course. That's all they are at CNN.
This guy is from the right, and he attempted to go to a press conference with the Premier of Victoria, which is akin to a governor in the US, and police actually escorted him out. They stopped him from attending the press conference, and they escorted him out on the direction of one of the advisors to the Premier.
Wow.
So that's the state of affairs over here. I still think that much, much worse than this virus is the fear itself and
absolutely
come from it.
And I need to mention this, you know, because a lot of the listeners to this program listen, of course, in the Northern Hemisphere, We have some heading towards South America, but they're still kind of at the equator line. And so they see a perpetual Florida kind of weather, the endless summer, endless spring. But where you are, down under, as we call it, or you call it, your seasons are exactly the opposite of ours, as we are hopefully getting out of our long winter. And it seems to be holding on with a death grip in Texas and the Midwestern United States. You know, it's hard to believe that in just about a month from right now, month and a week, month and a week and a half, is the first day of spring up here in our part of the world. Now, you don't really believe that when you live in Michigan or New Hampshire, but you will believe it if you live in Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, the southern half of the United States. And this extreme, strange, frozen cold front coming through Texas, hard to believe in 6 weeks will be a mere memory as they're looking at budding trees. But you'll be heading toward winter. And the reason I'm pointing this out is that, you know, we had the president of the United States talking about it's going to be a cold and long winter. And I guess that was for the weather and the virus and the politics and our personal feelings, and everything was going to be a rough time. And that was what we were told. Now, you're getting ready. You're in the middle of summer and you're still locking down. And then they're trying to give us some kind of phony hope for the spring, fall, and maybe next, you know, spring, summer, maybe next fall. So how was the summertime case numbers? And then I got a number about cases. You may or may not know the answer, but how have things actually gone there?
Negligible. I mean, there has hardly been any case, hardly been any deaths, I should say. Cases, yes, you see them here and there. The numbers, I will get that to you very shortly. But look, the last death that we had was December last year.
Wait a minute. December of last year was the last recorded death that you know of, and we're not, that would be considered a corona death, correct?
Well, that is correct. I think the date was the 28th of December, one death. Prior to that, we're talking about the 30th of November, one more death.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is not an overbearing problem in Australia. I think right now the cases are down to really negligible numbers.
And I'm going to just interject this. I've been pointing out on the program that back, I didn't realize this until a couple of days later, and somebody alerted me, and I looked it up to double check from reliable sources to make sure. I try to be very accurate. That magically on the 20th of January, the same day that Biden was up there getting inaugurated as the new president of the United States, the WHO changed on the 20th of January the requirements to actually have a case. And that was amazing, that the old method of the PCR test all by itself with 37 cycle threshold, suddenly you need a lower threshold and you need to have some real symptoms along with it. No more this asymptomatic nonsense. You had to have a positive test with a lower cycle threshold, plus you had to show some symptoms or you're not a case. Guess what happened in the United States? The case numbers have dropped to record lows since like September, October of last year.
Like magic.
Just like magic.
Yeah. Well, in Australia, the situation has been different to that. The case numbers have dropped. I just saw the figures just then yesterday. Six new cases. The last spike, if you could call it a spike, that we had was probably around about the start of the year. I think around about the 2nd of January, we had 35 cases, 35 new cases. So, you know, as I said, it's negligible. And there is a reason for that. And the reason, well, you know, if you fear the coronavirus and you just want to see it gone, The reason is good. If you fear the overreaction, the reason is bad. We went from a strategy in Australia of flattening the curve. You've heard that line many, many a times. It was a strategy whereby you were going to basically ensure the virus didn't spread rapidly in case there was a huge problem with overwhelming our health system. Somewhere along the line, the story changed, the plan changed. Mm-hmm. It changed from flattening the curve to...
Yeah, 15 days to flatten the curve became 30, became 60, and now it's 300 and something. We're still trying to flatten that curve.
And so it went from flattening the curve. We've forgotten about the curve. Curve's long gone. Curve's over. We've gone from flattening the curve to eliminating the virus. And I sort of... Look, you know, I can understand why people are fearful. The media has hyped it up and hyped it up and hyped it up.
Absolutely.
We've got daily death tallies and that sort of thing, and they're showing what's happening around the world and saying, oh, look, we wouldn't want Australia to be like this. But, you know, the problem is we're now trying to eliminate a virus. And I just, for the life of me, can't imagine any politician or political leader getting up and calling a press conference and announcing, you know what, our goal this year, our number one goal is to eliminate influenza. I think people would laugh at them. But yet with this coronavirus, it seems to be what's happening, and it seems to be the kind of thing that's getting them actual public support. I really don't understand that. Don't understand that apart from that fear is just through the roof.
You know, one of the things that I'm thinking about here, when I'm looking at landmass and everything else, Australia has got a large landmass. You got multiple time zones. And a lot of people will say, yeah, but Australia's got a population of just south of, 26 million.
That's right.
But let me ask this. Where is the population, centered for the most part? Where do you find the population?
Yeah, look, that's the thing. It's a huge landmass, but the population is heavily concentrated along the eastern seaboard. Mainly, there's some over in the west, but you pretty much have the bulk of Australia's population concentrated in three cities: Melbourne, Sydney, number one, of course, Melbourne, and then Brisbane in the state that I live in Queensland. So those three cities do take up the bulk of the population. The rest of it's spread fairly evenly along the eastern seaboard from right up the one side of Australia down to the bottom.
It's not like it's spread out evenly over the landmass. There's the key. And that's my point. So when you're talking about a virus, people would say, well, yeah, they're 10 miles apart from their nearest neighbor based on, the landmass and population. And that's not true. They're in cities, correct?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And if you have a look to see where the outbreaks of this virus have been, it has been in our capital cities. Mm-hmm. And can I just say, look, I often talk about the bad things that are going on here. Can I actually just say one good thing?
Absolutely.
People should have a look at the state government of New South Wales and what has been done in Sydney. And they have refused to do lockdowns as a knee-jerk reaction. They have taken a process of management, and they've taken a process that's very different to most other governments that we hear about, and actually they've been quite successful at it. And they're not getting the plaudits because there's not like nightly press conferences going on where they're talking about the numbers and trying to whip up more fear. They're simply managing things and getting on with life, letting workers go to work, let businesses open, and just managing the virus in a normal, coordinated fashion. And it's working for them. It is really working.
And how have they done, let's say, as best as you can determine, compared to other places that thought that, locking healthy people up in their homes and demolishing businesses was somehow a good idea? How have they done compared to the other locations?
They've gone very well. They've gone very, very well indeed. I mean, there's only been two situations where there's been a problem. One was when a cruise ship docked in Sydney, and this is very early in the piece, and that cruise ship actually had people on it that that actually had COVID-19, and they were unfortunately let to mingle in the community, which was probably a silly thing to have done, but it was a stuff up, and it was rectified very quickly, and I think they learnt from that mistake on how to manage things. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I'm not saying that they haven't done any draconian measures there. They did
early on
a very short lockdown late in last year. But it was considered that this was a last resort, and so they did an isolated lockdown of an area which was deemed to be a hotspot, and that was over very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And they just opened it up again. People are at work, businesses are open, and they're just managing the problem. And I think that that's the way all governments should go.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, my fear, and I think you and I will agree on this, that oftentimes bureaucrats and people in government have used this pandemic. Sometimes I don't understand why they've used it the way they have, and I don't get it. Was it really for the public good when you have, like in our country, governors like Governor Whitmer up in Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan? She does some things they didn't do in other states. Of the same kind of size and population and disbursement of people around the region. And her numbers are worse than places that said, we're not doing it this way. We don't play those games. And it seems that having 50 little experimental states to work from, yeah, I get it that, you know, the metro New York is a little bit more crowded, so is Connecticut. But even in states like New Jersey, where you do have areas that are not that crowded, you know, they were still doing draconian lockdowns in communities, and it made no sense, and it didn't do any better than places that didn't, that were comparable. And yet we still have governments that think that lockdowns are the only way to go and to keep fear going. It's going to cost Governor Newsom in California his job, and for that I'm thankful that he'll be gone. Now, what they get in the election is going to be anybody's guess, but there's no way he's going to survive. And I think of other states, obviously had,
good thing.
If New York had the ability of recalling a governor, Mario's kid, I call him St. Anthony Cuomo, the pious, would be gone. I mean, if he doesn't get arrested for being such a, you know, for killing people. I mean, the guy has been a disaster. Okay. So the virus, we're going to get away from the virus in a moment, but go ahead.
How could you say that about Cuomo? Isn't he an award-winning actor?
Yeah, that's the problem. That's all he is an award-winning actor. He's certainly not a governor by any stretch of the imagination, and nothing's ever his fault. It's always somebody else's fault. The guy over here didn't do his job. I did my job, and no one does their job, and why is everybody coming after me? You know,
terrible.
His father... Look, I disagree with his father on a lot of policy, because I was originally from New York State, but I'll give Mario Cuomo some credit. Believe it or not, I'm going to give him some credit. I didn't agree with a lot of his policy, but at least as a quote good Catholic, he was actually pro-life and you know, legislated that way. He was the last of a breed in that regard, where he actually put his faith ahead of his politics. His kids can't say that at all, if they even have any faith. From what I'm gathering, they've pretty well walked away and rejected it, but those are their personal decisions.
Very sad. And we have the same situation in Australia where, you know, there's a lot of... our Democratic Party is called the Labor Party. It's the sort of party of the left.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the old school Labor types, they, you know, they were staunchly Catholic. They were pro-life. They and they were for the worker. Nowadays, they're just for the trendy elites, and they're for the trendy elite causes, and they've walked away from any sort of semblance of being
a sort of a Christian socialist democratic party. It's sort of gone in a very different direction.
What I want to do right now, I'm going to take a quick break here. And when I come back, I want us to change gears. We've talked enough about the virus. I think I did enough of that this week early on here in the States. But I want to talk about something that I think is even a greater danger to any country that considers itself either a democracy or a republic, take your choice, or a free people that has some kind of a constitution that is supposed to guarantee basic rights. And I really want to get into the concept and the dangers of what I call the cancel culture. And I think that you've had a wee bit of that down under as well. Would that be a safe thing to say?
Oh, yeah. There's been plenty of canceling going on. And I can certainly elaborate more on that.
Okay, we'll be right back. This is Truth to Ponder. I'm your host, Bob Bierman. Reminding you once again, we want to thank all those that support this work. Visit our website, which is truth2ponder.com. Truth2ponder.com. The program is heard as a podcast and also as a radio station in a good chunk of North America. We will be right back.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
The way of the universe in a moment. Shalom Aleichem. This is the nice Jewish boy, Jonathan Kahn, your Jewish connection, bringing you the riches of your Jewish roots in Jesus. Now get your pen out as fast as you can so you don't miss out on receiving a special free gift you're going to get and love in a moment. Now God made the sun to give light. God made the rivers to give life. God made the clouds to give water. God made the trees to give fruit. God made fruit to give seed. God made seed to give birth to flowers and flowers to give perfume. So why did God make you? He made you for the same reason, to give. And that's why if you're living your life to take from this world, to get, your life is always going to be empty. You were made to give. So you can only find the reason you live in a life that's full by a life of giving. God made the sun to give light, and he made you to give the light of the gospel to those in need. God made the rivers to give life, so he made your heart to flow in the river of his spirit to give life to those around you. He made the trees to give fruit, so he made you to bear the fruit of the spirit, love and joy and peace. And God made the seed to be sown in the ground and bear a flower, so God made your ego to die to self and to bear a beautiful life. God made the flowers to give perfume, so God made you to bring forth the sweet fragrance of Messiah. God made your life for one purpose, to give. Sum it up in one word, love. God made you to love. You want to be full? You want to be fulfilled? You want to overflow with joy? Then give. Give love, give light, give hope, give peace, give affection, give a hand, give your possessions, give help, give money, give the gospel, give forgiveness, give encouragement, give acceptance, give love. Your life and every part of you was made to give. Your heart and your hands and your mind and your will. Give, it shall be given to you, pressed down, overflowing. Love, my friend, because it's the reason the universe exists. And you too. Want more? Ask for tithes and offerings. Now, how'd you like to receive something that we want to give to you? Special daily meditations and teachings with the riches of your Jewish roots in Jesus to give you victory for every day of your week and updates on Israel and prophecy, a free subscription to Sapphires, and the incredible The Mystery of the Temple Doors, all free. You'll love it. How do you get it? Easy. Just remember Jesus' Hebrew name, Yeshua, and dial it. Just dial 1-800-YESHUA-1. You'll be blessed, but call now. 1-800-YESHUA-1. Now, I invite you to join me in the Great Commission to bring salvation back to the Jewish people and to reach millions of unreached peoples around the world on five continents. Just call now. 1-800-YESHUA-1. That's YESHUA-1. Or write me direct, The Nice Jewish Boy, Box 1111, Lodi, New Jersey, 07644. That's The Nice Jewish Boy, Box 1111, Lodi, L-O-D-I, New Jersey, 07644. Till next time, this is Jonathan Kahn saying Shalom Aleichem, peace be to you, my friend, in Messiah, Hamatan, the gift.
This is Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman.
And welcome back to part two of the program, Truth to Ponder, for this Friday and weekend edition. So glad that so many of you take the time to listen both as a podcast and as a radio program. I'm going to get back to my guest in just a moment. I want to thank those that have taken the time to write the program, whether by U.S. mail or even simply by an email. You can send me an email from our website, truth2ponder.com. That is truth and the number 2ponder.com. Want to thank those of you that support this program each month. A lot of people have been helping out with the airtime cost. I don't get paid for doing this. Nobody does. We simply, what money we raise goes strictly 100% to cover the shortwave airtime. If you'd like to help, you can do that from the website, or if you prefer, you can make a check out to Ancient Word Radio, and the mailing address is 21 Berkshire, B-E-R-K-S-H-I-R-E, 21 Berkshire Lane, and add number 263. That is our secure, locked post box here in our complex. Number 263 in Sky Valley, two words, Sky Valley, Georgia, and the zip code 30537. That is 30537, and we thank you so much. My guest today is Member of Parliament in Australia, George Christensen, good friend of mine, and he and I have gotten to know each other better over these many months. And before I bring him back to answer some questions, not long ago, he made a speech in Parliament. Yeah, we need someone to make a speech like that here in the United States. And here's what George had to say.
I don't think most people want to live in a world where you can only post things that tech companies judge to be 100% true. I believe we should err on the side of greater expression. They're not my words. They're the words of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg from 2019. More so, he went on to say, in front of a speech, in a speech in front of Georgetown University students in 2019, this little gem. I don't think it's right for a private company to censor politicians. We had Jack Dorsey of Twitter tweeting out to us that Twitter stands for freedom of expression. That was in 2015. Oh, how times have changed. How times have changed. Where we now have these big tech social media conglomerates that are censoring political speech all over their platforms. And I, for one, do not think that that is right. That is an attack on democracy itself. That is an attack on free speech. And, you know, if you can censor and deplatform the leader of the free world, you can do it to anyone. There's an old saying, whoever takes down the king becomes the king. And these social media giants, these big tech corporations, are now way, way too powerful. They control the new town square, the new public forum, where a political discussion, where all sorts of discussion goes on. Now, of course, we should clamp down on illegal speech, on stuff that is harmful, that is defamatory, that's illegal, the content that is actual hate speech, not just speech that we hate, but actual hate speech, there is a difference. We should clamp down on all of those things that in a newspaper would not be allowed. But the problem is these big tech companies have gone far too far. They are now clamping down on political discussion, political commentary, political views, and they're also putting in the so-called fact checkers where they come in and say, sort of give the impression that a fact that you have posted is wrong when in fact it is a fact and it is correct. They do that by saying it's missing context. Tell me which news story isn't missing some form of context. So this is a very, very big problem for democracy, a very big problem. And look, unlike other speakers in this place, I do not wish to censor more these big tech companies. I do not wish to censor what people are saying on social media platforms. But I will concede this. They're actually now no longer platforms. They're publications. They're censoring speech that is lawful speech on what was once platforms, which is now basically their online publication. And so that is why, if these big tech companies don't bring themselves back to the point of being social media free speech platforms as they originally intended, that they probably should, as the member for Mallee has suggested, be liable for defamation. Because they've basically become publications now, publications which edit, they have editorial guidelines, they call them community standards, but now they're basically editorial guidelines. They're major publications which have a whole heap of volunteer contributors. And so if that's the model that they want, then that is what they're going to have to live with, and defamation and their liability for defamation is going to have to be part of their business as usual. Now, I wish, though, that they would just get back to what they were originally intended to be. Platforms for free expression. I don't think we're going to see that, but I've got to say that this area, whether we make these social media giants go back to being platforms, or whether we say, well, you're now acting like publications, and so you should be liable for defamation, this should be the focus of government, not simply giving legislation which makes these big tech companies pay big news companies. I don't want to see big tech corporations paying big news media corporations. What I want to see is legislation here protecting the little guy, protecting the average Australian. And that is what this motion is calling for.
And guess what? That little guy is you and us, even myself, even a small little program like Truth to Ponder would come into that equation. You know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of podcasts out there today that the big tech tyrants, they'll crush you like a bug if they don't like what you're saying. They're trying to have it both ways. We want to be a open forum, but we want to be a publisher with zero consequence. This is based on some old laws to help the internet get started in the 1990s. I think the time has come to change that. On top of that, it is the tech tyrants that are a big part of what is called the cancel culture. This is worse in my... This is almost as bad. It's going to get as bad as the Cultural Revolution in China. I just hope it doesn't come down to people having to die like they did back in Mao's time in China. But in many ways, we're trying to cancel culture and erase history. This is scary stuff for what is supposed to be a free people with guaranteed rights. And now we have tech oligarchs using their power over a political party to crush speech they don't like. It's got to come to an end. This can't be allowed to continue in our nation or in any free nation in the world. George, I welcome you back again to the program. George Christensen, Member of Parliament in Australia. And so, is the cancel culture a big deal right now in Australia? How would you put it?
Well, it's playing out a lot. I gave this speech to Parliament and was talking about big tech censorship in particular, you know, kicking people off social media platforms. Well, this very week, a friend of mine, a politician by the name of Craig Kelly, very outspoken, mainstream conservative politician, and he has been booted off Facebook. They kicked him off, barred him from the platform for 7 days. Hmm. And why did they bar him for 7 days? Well, yes, it is COVID related, and I know that you wanted to get away from,
from
the virus, but unfortunately it seems everything's related to it these days. So they've booted him off Facebook for posting contrarian information. Now, the mainstream media, or the fake news media, as I like to call them, they have tried to say that, oh, it's anti-vaccine material. Actually, he has never posted anything anti-vaccine. Mm-hmm. What he's posted is about alternative treatments that are out there. Mm-hmm. And it's not his views. He's not sharing his opinions or his views. He's sharing studies, some of them, most of them actually, peer-reviewed studies.
Yeah, and that's what's scary. And see, you're getting into an area that really is getting under my skin with Facebook and Twitter. I mean, I'm going to say it. If anybody ever watched Jack Dorsey in any of the hearings in the United States by the United States Senate last year, the guy stumbling around for answers, knows nothing about his platform, and he comes off to me as a guy looking for a meth hit. I mean, he looks like a meth addict. You know, he was just, his eyes were just all over. He looked like with the deer in the headlight look. And this is the guy that is deciding that, you know, President Trump has been banished from the site. Oh, and he's banishing people like everybody cares. Personally, I don't care about Twitter. It's a waste of my time. I don't mess with it anymore.
And you know, I'm with you. I banished myself from Twitter over a year ago.
Let it be an echo chamber for the left, and they can think that they've won. That's how I look at it.
It's worse than an echo chamber. Twitter is a cesspit. It is a cesspit of people, mm-hmm. mainly from the left, mm-hmm. who are just trying to hurl out the most pithiest insult that they can and make themselves look good. I'm not interested in that.
And, no.
I think that Twitter's going to be deplatformed quicker than they think themselves because of the nature of Twitter. However, it's still, if someone wants to be on Twitter, Twitter mm-hmm. once said that they stood for free expression.
No, they didn't. Well, they did,
he
maybe.
That him at himself. Now, if they stand for free expression, if they're truly a platform, just like Facebook, they should not be banning people. And this is the point. You played my speech a bit earlier, and I said in that speech this clear thing. These social media companies, these big tech tyrants, they can't have it both ways.
Exactly.
They either got to be platforms that are open speech, of course, you know, unlawful speech, defamation, incitement to violence, threats against people.
Yeah, you hold the platform blameless, and you go after the guy that made the inflammatory illegal statements or threats.
And I would give one more. I'd say that if the platform wants to take that stuff off its website, yep, they should be able to do it, because you know why? It's unlawful. There mm-hmm. is a difference. But there's also a difference between hate speech and speech that people hate. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem.
Hey, guess what? Sometimes people hate the truth.
Yeah, and they can't decipher the difference. So they're taking off speech, mainly political speech, that is mm-hmm. completely and utterly lawful in the USA, completely and utterly lawful mm-hmm. in Australia, and they're doing it under the guise of this offends our community standards. Well, there is another word for community standards, or another term for it. It's called editorial guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have editorial guidelines, and
then you're a publisher.
You are a publisher.
Exactly.
And you should be liable for every single little thing that goes on in your publication, including defamation. Now, I've got to tell you, I think that the big tech tyrants should be very, very worried about a country like Australia, as small as we are in the grand scheme of things, proposing to have defamation for what is published up on Twitter or up on Facebook.
Even Poland is looking at doing things of this nature, opening them up to expensive lawsuits and payouts.
And I just can't imagine that their business model will continue as normal if Australia, and it's being talked about, the treasurer, who is the finance minister for Australia, has already speculated that he might look at doing this. And mm-hmm. If we bring in defamation for these platforms and make them liable for it, what are they going to do? Are they going to have a million or so people working in Facebook in Australia checking every post to make sure that there's no defamatory content mm-hmm. in there for fear that they're going to get sued? Because I got to tell you, there's been a few very big payouts in the millions of dollars in Australia for defamation in recent times.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that is posted on some of these sites that they don't clean up when they should clean that stuff up, because, you know, it's defamatory and defamatory is unlawful.
As well, it should
be in trouble indeed. They're going to be in trouble indeed.
Let me ask this question, and this kind of going right back to a lot of the things that you have been stating over recent months, and I agree with. I mean, especially about the cancel culture. Let's just assume for a moment, you know, let's have some happy thoughts here, that, you know, we know that as Christians, we're going to be coming into some perilous times. Christians will always be hated for Christ's name's sake, period. I get it. But, you know, there comes a point in every despot's career, and there are a lot of despots in the world today running the show. The billionaire class thinks that they are totally insulated, and they think they've purchased and own all these governments. And they're going to try to control people. Now, you know, there are people that believe, and I tend to follow along, that there are some of those, you know, billionaire tyrants that would like to see less of the plebs out there and would not mind if we, you know, departed this earth sooner than later. I mean, we know that. I mean, that's just obvious. I mean, Bill Gates has made it clear we have to depopulate. And others, we need to, you know, we need to do all this stuff to save our planet, because once again, these are planet worshipers, not God worshipers. And we also know in the book of Romans what becomes of them. Now, with that said, God has a tendency to take us through times of tribulation, but we also see times when the pendulum swings back. And what would happen in a place like Australia or the United States when, you know, tyrants tend to overplay their hand, and it took 70 years in the Soviet Union, but it may not take that long in the United States. You know, we may have 7 years or we may have, you know, 7 months before people say, you know something, we've flat out had enough. And they start pushing back against these tyrants. And so what's going to happen to the Facebooks and the Twitters that think they rule the world and that they think they're the ministers of truth? And you either espouse the truth we tell you to, or we cut you off. So what is your thoughts on what could happen in this world to the Twitters and the Facebooks and what have you?
Look, I think that it might be starting to happen. People are getting angry about it. There's a growing number of people that are getting angry about it. The problem is that these big tech companies are backed up by the big news media corporations.
And
that,
billions of dollars.
Yeah, and the billions of dollars that's behind them. And what they do is that they reemphasize the fact that this politician, the one that I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. Craig Kelly, that he was kicked off Facebook for, quote-unquote, disinformation. Well, it wasn't disinformation, as I said. It was peer-reviewed studies that he was sharing.
Mm-hmm.
They try and keep the lie going for big tech.
Good example. Let's go back to last year, and you saw this. This was a worldwide event. You know, you had President Trump last year mentions the possibility of using hydroxychloroquine. And all of a sudden, the media goes ballistic. You can't do that. You can't have that drug. Then you had Fauci. You had the CDC. Everybody, no, 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 no. You can't do that. No, 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 no. It's dangerous. Nancy Pelosi, no, it'll kill you. Everybody's going ballistic over hydroxychloroquine. Now, I happen to know a little government secret from my prior work that they started, you know, believe it or not, in spite of all the media talking about hydroxychloroquine is bad, there's a lot of it stockpiled for the future. Now, let me explain something. As soon as Joe Biden gets in office, suddenly hydroxychloroquine is good again. How about that?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Suddenly it's all, suddenly you had Facebook and Twitter and all the media was, you know, hydroxychloroquine bad. You must, you know, use the expensive drug. You must just, you know, accept the fact you're going to die on a ventilator. You know, you can't think that. We have to social distance and wear a 3-face mask and a pantyhose over our head now is what they're literally suggesting. And, you know, for what? It doesn't do any good. The more you do it, we find out, the less it works. So, you know, so what's going to happen when the pendulum swings and what do you hope and pray for?
What I hope and pray for is particularly against these big tech tyrants, because that's where the rubber hits the road for this issue. Because the reality is, whether we like it or not, these social media platforms are like the new town square.
Mm-hmm.
The old media is actually dying, and new media is coming. But the problem is right now, the new media is dominated by Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
And you know, to a lesser degree in Australia, Instagram and YouTube.
Yeah, same here.
You know, the problem is we're going away from the big corporate fake news media into the hands of the big tech tyrants, and
who have more money than the fire. Look, when you think about it, this is a scary thought. When you talk in U.S. dollars, Facebook is worth over a couple hundred dollars for every man, woman, and child on the face of the planet, including the darkest regions of the poorest countries in the world, where literally it's still worth a couple hundred dollars for every man, woman, and child.
As a company, Facebook is wealthier than Australia. As a company, Facebook is wealthier than Australia. So that's the scale that we are looking at.
It's worth more than many nations on the face of the earth, even ones that produce gold and the stuff to make those batteries for the electric cars.
I think pretty much you could say the same of Google. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, these massive multinationals that could be more powerful than governments. But here is where the fix will come in. When governments, and it will be conservative governments, because the left are happy with it. And the left are happy with it as long as these big tech tyrants just keep on pinging conservatives. Where they keep on, if they keep on censoring the content in that direction, which they're going to,
absolutely,
the left are going to be happy. And I'll touch on in a minute why the left are wrong with that. But anyway, the change will come when conservative governments get a bit of spine and say, no, we are sovereign nations here, and you will not do that sort of stuff in our country. Now, that's starting to happen. You alluded to Poland earlier.
Right.
I know that the justice minister over in Poland is got laws drafted, which is going to set up some form of government board or government council, which will oversee the how these social media platforms regulate their spaces, and they will not allow certain things to go on in terms of censorship.
Right.
Every decision regarding some censorship or editing on a platform will have to be approved by this government council. So I suspect that they might just simply pull the plug on Poland and not have the platforms reaching Poland.
Yeah.
And you know what? That might be a good thing.
That's fine. And guess what? Other countries may say, you know something? We don't need them here either, because you go back here in the United States, go back to early January, you've got the idiots at CNN. I mean, these people are brain dead, or they have some, you know, satanic ritual going on that they worship to come up with the stupidity that they do. But I'm just saying, everybody was saying it was all Parler's fault that we had the Capitol break-in. Well, and that's how, you know, they got deplatformed by good old Amazon. They're back now. Again, hopefully they'll stick around a while, like it or not. I mean, it is what it is. But here's what we do know. It was never Parler that was the platform people that were using to raid the Capitol. It was Facebook the whole time. That's what it has come out. It never was Parler. It was still Facebook, because Parler has... They're new, and there's too many issues with their speed and everything else, or connectability at times. So, yeah, it was not Parler. It was Facebook from the get-go. And it wasn't, honest to goodness, Trump supporters. Talk about something. It happened here in this country, too. But even your Australian broadcasting company was paying an Antifa guy for video from the raid.
Paid him $2,500 United States, and I got to say, I saw that CNN and other sources had paid him tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, $35,000 from CNN, $35,000 from NBC, and you know, the National Broadcasting Company, private corporation, it's not a government entity, but $70,000 to a guy in his 20s because he has an iPhone and knew how to take a video.
Yeah, I mean, and the guy is up on charges.
Yeah, and he's also known Antifa guy. I mean, he's under a lot of charges for his Antifa activity. And then we find out that, you know, the most disgusting thing I realize now, two weeks ago, you know, they had the officer that was allegedly killed at the Capitol. You know, they had him lying, you know, his remains, he was cremated, lying in state at the United States Capitol. And you have Nancy Pelosi and everybody saluting, you know, the box and everything else. And the story that the New York Times had put out, he was killed by Trump supporters with a fire extinguisher. Turns out he died of a blood clot stroke the next day. He had been fine. He had been talking to family. Nothing from any of that. Well, then the new narrative is, well, maybe it was, you know, bear spray or something. Well, yeah, if it's going to do something, that'll do it in minutes. It doesn't do it hours later, and it doesn't do it a day later. If you have a reaction, you're going to have one or you're not. Not 24 hours later. The guy died the next day. And so the only people that died at that entire Trump thing were Trump supporters. So I don't want to hear, you know, about the five that died. Three, by the way, died of just normal medical issues, like, you know, you get 250,000 people together in a town, the odds of somebody just dying of a heart attack is pretty significant with no activity going on.
Yeah, so that's right. And, you know, but the lies are just unbelievable. In Australia, I've got to say that we have double the problem that the US has, because your news is already filtered through the fake news lens, and then we get it into Australia, and it goes through a double fake news lens. So you know, the vast majority of people in Australia think that Donald Trump whipped up all these people, told them to go to the Capitol and destroy the building.
When he never said it.
Killing people. When he never said it. And, you know, if you dare defend Donald Trump, you are seen as some insurrectionist or terrorist supporter here in Australia yourself. So,
I get it.
That's terrible. But can I just say, just on one thing I said before, the left support this sort of cancel culture stuff, support what big tech is doing, but they want to tread very, very carefully. It was only a few weeks back, if I remember correctly, that the Socialist Workers' Party of the UK, the United Kingdom, had their Facebook page removed.
Ooh.
Removed. Now, there was also their student wing had their Facebook page removed. And there was some other small left-wing group in the US that had its Facebook page removed. Mm-hmm. At the same time, now I don't think this is a left or right issue, but the Julian Assange campaign, which to be fair, it's mainly left-wing supporters on the Julian Assange campaign. But the Julian Assange campaign had its shop removed from Facebook, where they were raising funds for their campaign. So why did all this happen? Well, Facebook come out and said, oh, it was an error. It was our automation system. It conducted an error. Maybe not. But whatever the case, it just goes to show that the deplatforming and the cancelling doesn't just happen in one direction. When they know they've got the power to do it, they will start removing any voice that they disagree with.
Because those voices may disagree with Mr. Zuckerberg or Mr. Dorsey or somebody else, you know, involved at Google. And so, these tech tyrants think they own you and that you work for them. George, it has been great to have you again on the program today. And I, you know, we need to do this more often. And I know the biggest problem, people say, you need to bring George back. Well, they keep forgetting the 14-hour time difference that we have to deal with in trying to do this program. And unlike me, who's retired, you actually still work for a living as a member of Parliament. So it makes it even more difficult. Any last things? We got a moment here before we need to kind of, you know, bring today's episode and weekend episode to an end. Anything you want to add?
The only thing I want to add is this, Bishop Bob, thank you for what you are doing. I know your podcast is growing immensely. I know there's people in Australia who are listening to it as well.
Oh, yeah, they are.
But you are doing a tremendous amount of work for the greater good in what you're saying and the issues that you and the people you bring on your program are actually pointing to. We don't get this from many other sources, so good on you, more power to you, and God bless.
George, I want to thank you for being on the program today. And I know it's not easy for us to sometimes connect because of the time difference, as we mentioned just a little bit ago. But I like to bring you on from time to time. It gives a different perspective from another part of the world. We're told in the scripture to pray for those in authority, those in leadership. And I know sometimes it's really not easy. I get it. I know there are times when you see people in politics just doing just totally evil, horrible things, being totally untruthful, lying with impunity, and knowing that they're doing it and not caring, and looking after their power base for themselves, and you're just somebody to use to get from point A to point B. We call that the swamp in D.C. And let's not be deceived. It hits in a lot of state houses around this country as well. It seems that government always attracts a number of people that can find a way to do well for themselves. Saw a video the other day, and some people have tried to excuse it or explain it away, but it hits rather difficult with what I saw. This one person that works in California, I think it was around the Lancaster area, shutting down a business and having a happy dance because she has a job, her paycheck's intact, and while she's watching this place on the verge of bankruptcy, she's just happy. Some people said maybe she's just nervous. I don't know, but you'd think that this would be a solemn occasion, but too many in government think it's, you know, hey, my paycheck's good. I don't care about you. A lot of people are enjoying the power trip. We need to pray for all those in authority. Like I say, I know it's not easy, but we're told to do it anyway. So let's learn how to be more prayerful. Maybe that'll be something to help us out for a while. Maybe that'll buy us some time as we're heading toward a time of, I think, tribulation and God's righteous judgment against many of his people. I really believe that. So many Christians have fallen away. They've had it easy. They don't understand what it means to be persecuted and not loved and popular. Nowhere in the Bible does it say you're loved and popular by the world. You're, in fact, hated for Christ's name's sake. So this is the purpose of our program. Do you believe in the work that we're doing here? As I'm closing out this program for this week and weekend, would you keep us in prayer? If you can help us a little bit on the airtime cost, it means the world to me. I'm not a paid employee. I don't get anything out of doing this show. That's not why I'm here. I'm only here for one purpose, to bring you truth to ponder and guests that'll help in that process. If you can help us make the check payable to Ancient Word Radio, and you can write us here at 21 Berkshire, Berkshire, 21 Berkshire Lane, number 263. That is, by the way, our highly secure post office box. 21 Berkshire Lane, and that's number 263. That is our secure P.O. box here. 21 Berkshire Lane, number 263, in Sky Valley, two words, Sky Valley, Georgia. And the zip code here is 30537. That's 30537.
This has been Truth to Ponder with Bob Bierman. To find out more, visit our website, truth2ponder.com. That's truth2ponder.com. Truth to Ponder, shining the light of truth in a darkening world.